Hey folks, how's it going? Hey Sharad, today, you can't say another lender, another fintech. Today is going to be slightly different.
Yeah, a refreshing change from all the fintech and lending we've done. So we're stepping into a direct consumer product, more on the cosmetic side. But this is definitely a refreshing change.
Yeah, we usually bash fintech when we don't have a fintech guest, and we do it the other way around when we do have a fintech guest. I think forget that this is all public information. Anyways, we have with us Priyank Shah, director, co-founder of Rene Cosmetics. Priyank, welcome to the show. How are you?
Thank you, guys. Thank you. I'm doing very well.
And it's an absolute pleasure to have you with us, Priyank. You're obviously your persona and your previous venture, I think, fit in very well. You set up Beardo, and you have a nice, very, I would say, articulated kind of a beard, which me and Sharad can only aspire to have, and obviously adds a certain bit of persona and wisdom to everything that you say. And I look forward to hearing that out.
Absolutely there on point. Shall I be at least on point? I'm trying. I'm trying.
Sharad wishes, and no. So Rene, quickly. Obviously, it's an Indian makeup and cosmetic company. You guys focus a fair bit on cruelty-free products. You launched in 2018 out of Ahmedabad, and prior to that, you obviously set up Beardo. You got a nice exit from there with Marico, and then I think your experience in male grooming fit in perfectly within Rene's overall mandate. And I think from an outside-in perspective, business has been doing well. You guys have also raised a bunch of capital. So firstly, congratulations on that. And Priyank, I would love to start from the start in terms of how you kind of associated yourself with this particular venture. And from there, we can probably delve a bit more into what Rene does and how you differentiate yourself in a rather competitive sector.
So the story goes way back 2010, okay, where internet was not even a thing. Me and Ashutosh both started this daily deal website called Aaj Ki Item, where we used to source products from across the country and we used to sell it to our customers. So maybe D2C even was not a term at that point of time. Since then, we've been doing these businesses. I think there was little, we were not able to scale it to a level wherein businesses were good and we did not want to catch the train of investing and making it loud. I think we missed out on that. But yeah, going back to this quick internet and D2C, we've been doing since then and we've been trying to work around a lot of many other factors. Primarily, what we were doing was trading. So we used to sort products and we used to sell it on our website. But it was no good. We were easily replaceable. That's no fun, okay? So me and Ashutosh again thought in 2015 that we need to work on something. This is anyone can do it. There's no big thing in this. We started working on brand. We wanted to do something which is there forever. I absolutely understand that everything would have end to it, but at least it's there for a long point of time. And we figured out that brand is the only thing which is gonna remain forever, is gonna sustain, and no other thing. So we ventured out into multiple categories, electronics, maybe sneakers, lifestyle, all of that. But we saw that reliability towards China. If we speak of electronics, it's all dependent on Chinese products, or maybe China is the base. If we again reach out and understand some other category, again, it was some or another way we were connected, wherein we would have to rely on someone, which again you cannot make a sustainable brand. So we thought of grooming as a product because men's grooming was a clear, there was like clear gap in the segment. No one was doing men's grooming. We thought of doing it, and luckily, Gujarat, where we based out of, a lot of pharma and grooming and cosmetic industries have flourished here.
Right.
Took opportunity to figure out how to even do men's grooming. We did not want to just come up with my face wash is better than your face wash or any Me Too product like all these other brands are doing. That was a clear no-no for us. If you want to create a brand, if you want to have a cult following, you have to figure out something. At that time, we figured out beard is the only macho factor which would at least differentiate a man and a woman. Obviously, there are not many things, but in terms of look and appeal, beard is a clear differentiator. Or maybe there's this point wherein, you know, beard equal to alpha male was a statement in 2015, and that's how we started promoting our brand. A lot of other debatable things, but I'm not going on that front. But yeah, that's how we started our brand. Let's start with beard grooming, and then maybe let's venture out to whole of the grooming aspects. So that's how Beardo came into inception. We came up with the beard oil, washes, mustache waxes, and all of that, like pretty much to do with beard. Then we ventured out for whole grooming as a session.
So just to like, you know, understand, like in case of Beardo, like you kind of were from a product development standpoint, you know, what parts of the value chain were you really focused on? Was it more on the, you know, sourcing and the marketing and the branding end of the spectrum, or you guys were pretty deep into the manufacturing end of the product as well?
So till date, we do not manage manufacturing on our own. It's all third party.
Right.
And Beardo and Villain, there was a quick turnaround with a brand called Villain in 10 months. It was a perfume brand, which we sold to last year, like this year. And then it's Rene. So all of these brands, we are never into manufacturing. It's all third-party manufacturing.
Right.
We are only focused on how to create a brand. That's right. It. That's the only one-liner for all of the organizational people working around here. That guys, if we are not able to create that kind of following in any of the brands, it's not going to sustain. You don't want to come up with any XYZ other products and just claim better than other 10 other brands. That's not how we do it. So that was never our story, and we were always running for brand building. That's it.
Right.
That's the underlying story.
You know, like one of the things that we all often talk about when we're talking about these brands is like building a brand is one thing, but the bigger challenge is distribution, right? And sort of how do you sort of, I know like with the guy kind of guys you had at the cap table, they obviously opened up some distribution angles earlier, but from Beardo and from Rene's standpoint, like how do you sort of manage distribution? And I guess you cannot think of it as a full digital only distribution, right? You probably need a supplemental brick and mortar as well. So what is the learning and thought process that you've sort of adopted on the distribution side?
So absolutely, you rightly said that it's important to have a proper balance split between online and offline ways of selling. With Beardo, we identified that where would a main go? It's set off. No matter what, you'll not want to visit a pharmacy or a general store. You'll never want to visit until there's some emergency. But Salo, you're going to visit at least once a month or maybe twice in 1 month.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We identified this gap. We figured out that it's very important to reach out to all the Salo. By the time we were in talks with primary stage of merger with Marigold. So there were two stages of merger. One merger and one was full merger. So when we were about to sell our 45% of equity to Marigold, it was 2017, I remember. We were already 5,000 odd. We were having a distribution base of say 90 to 100 distributors we had on board, pan India, online obviously all these marketplaces. Offline we were in all good chains of salons like Naturals, Union Drives, and that.
Yeah.
So we were already there.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it took us a little more time to understand and all, but trust me, business would teach, or business is the best teacher for you guys. We do not come with vast experience of distribution and all, but I think it was pretty much easy. We understood a lot many other things in terms of tweaking the modules, or maybe tweaking the strategy of giving up a little more in terms of your margins and maybe some good offers and that all of it. Plus also the product acceptability was there. So I would not want to deny that. Yes, there was this acceptability, right time, right spot, plus the overall channel which helped us really well in managing our distribution as well. Plus Marigold coming in, it was absolutely a lot of help in terms of evaluating commercial angles to it, evaluating compliance angles to it and all of it. Trust me, that helped us a lot in building this space. But yeah, it added up more value after merging up with Marigold.
Yeah, and when you sort of go to salon, and this is just for our interest and for the listeners, like, how does that conversation go? I mean, when you're in your initial days, you're fighting for shelf space, let's say the well-renowned salon, which is what, let's say 10 outfits in the city. You go in, you ask for product placement, I guess, or shelf space. How does that sort of conversation take place? And did you see a lot of pushback in the initial days?
Not really.
Okay.
Because what happens is salon is the only space wherein they do not have anything in terms of shelf. It's like to go and just maybe use services, maybe hair trimming, this, that, and come out. So we try to uplift them in a way that, see guys, this is another model where you can even earn for yourself. So we started training models for them that how you can make money out of selling products, also out of selling services. So that was overall strategy that we played. Lately, what happened is we started taking space, we started taking holding spaces, wherein it was a 50-50 split between a salon and an organization.
Okay.
So, yeah, all of the other brands were paying for sales space, and we were the only one who were taking money to make sure that you have Beardo on your main brand board, which will at least, invite more consumers to you, or else someone would want to walk in your salon. Now you are a Beardo salon, most of the people would want to, walk in. So that's, I think, a beautiful strategy that really worked well for us. Yes, a strong, solid team. We had a team of 150 odd people when we were handing it over, plus a distribution strength of 250 to 280 distributors pan India.
Yeah.
All these modern trade outlets, this, that. So made really an impact when it came to brand building.
Yeah. And interesting, we're just switching to Rene here, but like from a completely sort of male-leaning product line to very cosmetic and women forward play, right? Like, I mean, what's the sort of, I understand a lot of underlying logic and underlying business logic could be overlapping from, the supply chain, as what Nikhil was talking about, to distribution, but how come the sort of, what is the rationale there?
So I think Ashka founded Rene, she was trying to work around with a lot of other products. We're good friends. We go long way back. So she was venturing out into color cosmetics and all, and we were about to sell Beardo to Magic. So this was the time wherein we thought of partnering out with her rather than we also coming up with a color cosmetic brand, and even she doing by herself. Why not to have an expert on board? Like, everyone would have their own expertise. She would come with product expertise. I would come with offline expertise. Ashutosh comes with online expertise. So we thought of partnering, and that's how we started. We framed our company, and then we started a little late in 2020 of 2020 of maybe after March exiting from Beardo, we started Brunei. So all this from black and white to colorful, it's been a crazy journey so far. 18 months of our journey with Rene, but it's been wonderful. I understand it's very important to understand your TG. So from what we've been doing from Beardo days, here it's completely different. But yeah, at the end of the day, and if you understand your consumer well, it's all the same. Trust me.
Right. I couldn't help but notice, like, when you were talking about especially the offline distribution challenges, right? Or challenges or opportunities in your case. I mean, I'm sure at that point in time, there must have been conversations about, you keep the inventory on your books and we'll take some sort of a revenue share. And, over time, as in when the brand becomes more and more powerful and attractive and they know there's some amount of uptick which is expected, they'll basically enter into more of a B2B kind of an arrangement with you, right? But in parallel, there must have been a constant direct-to-consumer push from your end, right? I mean, obviously, you guys are going through salons, and I guess in case of Rene also, you guys are going through offline channel, but there must have been a constant, online direct-to-consumer push so that visibility is there, right? Now, what really kind of is something that I would always like to understand is that D2C is tough, right? I mean, D2C is, you need a fair amount of, I guess, marketing support, or, you know, I don't know whether you guys were doing guerrilla marketing. Like, how would you kind of, you know, there's so much product out there, right? I mean, like, for example, in case of Rene, also Rene has its own branded stuff, right? Like, yeah. Nykaa is also now doing its own branded stuff. They do third party, obviously. So one thing is obviously there's your TG must be very, very well carved out and differentiated. But, you know, as soon as you kind of look at in terms of price comparison, right, or in terms of the functionality of a product, there are so many alternatives out there, right? So did you kind of go ahead with, influencer marketing or, you know, some sort of guerrilla techniques to make sure that, you know, these are the ways by which our TG will really recognize with our product? Like, how did you kind of carve out those strategies?
So I split it into two parts. One, what is Rene, and other is how we, how are we different than others. So Rene, what we are trying to do is we are trying to create, but it is an aspirational brand. See, there has to be an aspirational value whenever you try to buy something out for yourself, or else it makes no sense for you. Okay, so it's an aspirational brand with an acceptable price point.
Right.
You cannot be haphazard with your price point as well. I absolutely understand that. Whatsoever you're trying to do, making sense, but there has to be that acceptability in the price point. At the end of the day, it's a mastery factor. Okay? So you'll have to make sure that you work accordingly to make sure that you attract that exact clientele or a consumer at the end of the day, ending up buying your product. So it's very important to even work on that kind of price point. Plus, when we speak of color cosmetics, it is not so loyal category because women would want to keep on understanding or changing or trying out new and new shades every time. So they would not stick to one product or maybe one shade every time.
Right.
Then you'll have to keep on improvising. So that's right. How we see the category, and that's how we work on it in a way wherein there has to be an aspirational value to it. How do we even create a follower, a cult following about the brand as well, which no other brand has done. Okay, tomorrow XYZ brand you stated, if it's not in the market, it's not going to make any difference to a consumer. So we want to try and make sure that we are that one kind of a brand. If it's not there, it's going to make a lot of difference to the people out there. Second, how are we different, or maybe what are we doing differently than other brands? I would like to say that there are two splits. One is innovation in product.
Yep.
No matter what, there has to be innovation in the product, or else it's just me too. No one, like other brands, like 10 other shades of offering of the lipstick or nail paints or this or that, is not adding up any value, just adding your dead inventory, because all of the brands are doing it. So we here at Rene particularly work on innovation, and we take it very seriously. So far, trust me, we've done three innovations. One is our Fab 5.
Yep.
So it's 5-in-1 lipstick. We understood, we reverse engineered that how this overall, consumers do work. Like, whole full kitty of products, and you want to, it's so hard to choose. So why not we give 5 shades in 1? We even patented it, even we granted a patent for the product, the mechanism, all of it. So we worked on it. We understood our consumers that, guys, this is a serious problem in carrying 10 shades, 20 shades at one time, because if you go and not allowed to check a woman's bag, but if you try and understand woman's bag, at least there will be 4-5 other shades of lipstick,
right,
and 4-5 types of lipsticks and this and that and other stuff. So we understood innovation is very important. Again, we worked on another product called Pathways.
So sorry, just to kind of, get into this a bit deeper, how did you come across this pain point? Like, did you do some kind of was it an anecdotal kind of a thing or experiential kind of a thing, or you actually went for like a formalized survey? Like, how did it actually come out?
So it's all about brainstorming. Okay, so Ashutosh and myself, we continuously work on why this, like, why do you want to come up with a product? It's very important to ask this question to yourself and then go out and reach out to public. Like, we are 70 odd people, team members at HO, and we have another 500 VA-led outlets.
Right.
So we have all these other beauty advisors, which we term them VA, are all mostly women. Okay, so we get a very great understanding of what the actual problem is. You also get an understanding of what product or maybe what pain point. So we have a data bank wherein we try and reach out to them, understanding that, guys, this is the problem, this is the kind of solution that we're trying to provide. What, how do you rate this? And then we end up having our product innovation. One other product innovation, I'll just tell you quickly, Pap Face. Right. It is like one lipstick, which is gonna provide eyes, face, and lips. Because, you know, still people, a woman basically, are not savvy in terms of, like, we are improvising, we are growing, we are educating, like, the country is growing in terms of color cosmetics, but they do not know how to match. So we come up with two sticks. You don't need to worry all what kind of color, skin color you have or whatever it is. You apply this for your eyes, cheeks, and lips, and you are ready to go.
Are they like, I mean, this is very fascinating, you know, I mean, I understand the value of brainstorming and the fact that you guys have internal experts and, you know, regular users of products who kind of come up with feedback, which drives this innovation. But did you also look at, say, I don't know, like, are these like very customized solution for the Indian audience, or have you seen some precedents, you know, of, you know, different countries, you know, maybe other emerging markets where similar innovations also caught your eye? And you thought, why don't we, you know, localize it for the Indian context?
So far, any of these three innovations, if I speak of Pap 5, there is no such prototype in the market available, not even a global market. It's only here. We also hold patent for that. Again, Pap Face, wherein one stick would solve problem. Understanding working women or understanding people, you know, lack of knowledge of makeup and all, they are ready to go. One product. We have another one product called PH stick, PH Madness stick, black colored lipstick, which is gonna add up for the pH balance of your body.
Right.
Which scientifically also proves that, you know, would like would give the color of the lips. Like once you apply, the lips would turn from pink to red depending on the pH balance, which actually suits really well on your face color or your face line.
Right.
Yeah, so all this, you know, there is nothing available in the market. The time you start understanding your consumer base, the time you start understanding what are the problems, reverse engineer it that, okay, this is the problem, this kind of solution fits best, is how we try and work out it.
Right.
Priyank, like, you know, I understand sort of innovation, and obviously there's a continuous effort to sort of evolve and grow your product portfolio, right? How are you seeing the competitive landscape? And like the reason we ask is, like, a lot of time, you know, for Nykaa and guys like that, a risk is like rising customer acquisition costs, right? Just because there are a lot of guys coming in and it's getting VC funded. There's a lot of money that's gone into the sector now from Mama Earth and other guys who are sort of, Nykaa like has their own line and you guys are there. And how do you sort of, like, what are you seeing in the marketplace in terms of acquiring those customers, right? I mean, one thing is to sort of spend incredibly high amounts on digital advertising and, you know, the search engine optimization piece of it, try to get yourself up there. But what other ways do you think you can sort of lower your cost of acquisition, or how do you think about that, like, on a longer term basis?
So, first of all, yes, gradually or in this last decade, if you understand that the cost have gone really high. Primarily, brands on internet were less and consumers were acceptably well-based. Consumers were there and the internet as a specifically talk about. Lately, what we've seen is there are a lot of brands that have came in. And the steady base of consumer is not that prominent. The post is there, but it's not that prominent. So what is happening is that your ROI is going down. The customer acquisition cost, which was maybe like if you spend, say, 100 rupees, you are able to make a sale of 700, 600. Right now, the point is that at par, like if you're spending 500 rupees, you're getting you are closing a sale of 500 rupees. It's 1-to-1. It's even 0.5 for a lot of other brands. Even it's bad than 0.5 as well. But that's how the industries have worked, because, you know, when you get into this competitive market, it's gonna hurt. Obviously, Facebook and Google are at a good space this point of time. But for brands, it's gonna be tough. Apart from it, my other angle to look at it is you'll have to have multiple avenues of sales. You cannot depend on one avenue. That is for sure. Rest, when we speak of how VC funds, how other brands take it, okay, pre-funds ka paisa hai. let's try and spend crazily and let's try and increase our build and this and that. That's not a sustainable model. I today also see this as a business. No matter what, I think three brands we've raised funds and maybe two of them we've already sold. But none of my brands are loss making till date.
Yeah.
Though I would be at par, but I would never go into loss. I will still see this as my business. This is my business. Absolutely, investors would have trusted in us and have funded us. But that is not the money that I want to make losses for.
Yeah.
There is this term that we are acquiring consumer and it's going to give a lifetime of sales and this and that. It's all not, which I feel that's not correct because consumer at the end of the day are keep on going to try different and different products and brands. That's not how you can evaluate it. Right now, because you have someone else's money, you are trying to bid 100 rupees ke product mein 100 rupees ka bid. But it's not on that.
Yeah.
It's very important to create that kind of brand value for your product and also making good businesses. Yes, try and work out in a way wherein you are trying to bet little more. It's all gamble. I absolutely understand. It's okay to gamble, but making sure that it's balanced. It's not that okay, you are out of the fund and at the end of the day, no consumer is even turning back.
You know, it's interesting because one of the things that we often we saw that in Nykaa talk about it in their IPO prospectus and things like that, the role of content, right? I mean, they use it as a key tool to supplement their acquisition. Is that something that you guys think about as well to create like a content based marketing play? Is that something that you think about?
Absolutely, it is important and it is really well as well. But what have happened is all this point. Initially, like we talk about this 5 years, okay? So a lot of brands have been the content creator when, you know, it's like my word against everything. So if I'm a content creator, if I'm trying to propose something, if I'm trying to propose XYZ brand, this product, tomorrow other brands are going to come and ask a content creator to do the same thing. So that is contemplating and that is the reason wherein consumers are losing trust on these all YouTubers who are trying to promote because they overdo it.
Mm-hmm.
There are good people who are gonna balance it out. But yes, when you take it as a business, then it's pure no-no for your viewers as well. Because at the end of the day, you are trying to promote each and everything. You're just trying to make money for yourself, but not giving absolute idea about what product is doing.
Yeah,
it was not this story 5 years back. But yeah, it is still helping YouTubers community to have a very good fan page, like fan base following. Again, on Instagram and all, what we see is that it is there, but the call to action is still missing.
Yeah.
The ratio of call to action has gone 50% in this 3 years before that.
Okay.
50% down.
Interesting. That's interesting.
Yeah.
You know, Priyank, I was kind of just thinking, like, obviously in Beardo, like, you guys focused on a extremely, I would say, niche segment, right, as a starting point, and you pretty much built a micro-monopoly in that, and then you kind of went in the broader range of, you know, male grooming as a category. However, obviously, in case of Rene, it's like makeup and cosmetics is a fairly established large category, so that kind of, you know, obviously, from a funnel standpoint, your TG is phenomenally important, right? How do you really define your TG? Like you did mention in the beginning that, you know, there has to be an aspirational value from a price point standpoint. Also, you don't want to kind of go in the ultra, ultra premium segment so that it still stays massy. But how do you, like, you know, really, what's the framework you use to define your own target market?
See, primary target market is someone who has access to internet and falls into age group of 18 to 35.
Right.
That is how we define our primary target whenever we are trying to build something in terms of even our ad campaigns or even trying to create the content piece. Both of this is defined to 18 to 35 kind of price. 18 to 35 kind of EG. That's our age group. That's how we look at it primarily. Then also we do keep on focusing on area of interest. That what are the kind of interests, if we speak of online specifically, we try and understand that what are the kind of interests that people would have to end up buying a color cosmetic product. So that's how we keep on tapping their area of interest, how do we market, their also understanding of a lot many other things, what they view, what they see, all of this. Lately, what we've started doing is trying to engage with multiple kind of people. Someone, TV actresses, would have a great fan base following from 30 to 37, 38. A serial which is being voiced by this age group women. We also try and reach out to all this new age singers or maybe Twitch influencers whose direct TG is somewhere from 16 we do not promote, but 18 to 22, 25, like teens and all of them. So that's how we beautifully carve our campaigns and that's how we direct them. For offline as well, what do we do is in Beardo as well, we reached out to 25,000-30,000 outlets, salons and GT board. Right now with Rene, what we've done is we have a module called Shopping Shop. So we take a prominent space in any of the beauty outlets, which are led by our beauty advisor. And that's how we have created only a small little of spaces where you will see Rene. Rest, Pathfind, we have again 2,000 normal outlets where you only get Pathfind, nothing more.
Right.
Pickup points, kind of thing, wherein you can direct easy things like Apollo or Health and Growth or something like that.
Right. Interesting because do you like also use personas in terms of defining your TG? Like I understand the age demographic, but you know, like things like city, like tier one city resident, English speaking, working professional, like do you use those also, or you would like to keep it by design slightly broad so that, you know, you can kind of tap into a wider audience?
Yeah, it is absolutely important to understand each and every aspect of it. Like we do not have any one celebrity on board. We have three celebrities on board. We have Rashmika Mandanna, we have Liana D2, we have Muni Roy, we have two other more who's gonna cater. Because we understand that everyone would have their different ways. Like South industry would have their different ways of followers and all. Like West would have their different ways. Again, North would have their different needs and tastes and all of it. So that's how we try and create and design our campaign geographically located as well.
Right.
Because, from lipsticks, like if in case it is a humid, it's a humid territory, people would not want to buy a dripping kind of lipstick. They'll want to buy something which is matte in nature.
But
if in case it is, cold regions, people would want to buy glosses. So that's all what you have to keep on understanding, because it's very important to even understand geography, even understand consumer behavior, what they follow, what their interest would be, what is their price capacity to even sell, spend. Everyone's pocket to spend is also there. Again, we have accessibility in terms of price point, but still you cannot overshoot. So, it's like glosses at very affordable price of 350, maybe good lipsticks, affordable price at 450, all of that. So, which could also help us entering into tier 2 and tier 3 area.
Nice.
But somehow what we've seen is that sales from tier 2 and tier 3 is more than tier 1 these days.
Yeah.
Because it's very fancy and new for them.
Right.
Tier 1 is like something high.
Right.
It's also being characterized by a higher women participation in the workforce, which I think is naturally correlated with the uptake and spending on these items, right? Very, very interesting. Priyank, obviously, totally hear you on the innovation front, and it sounds very interesting as well. I mean, my wife used to all say, I heard her say, now it's making sense, that most of the lipsticks that you see are designed for the Western women in terms of skin complexion, race, and even temperature. So I can see what you're saying when you're saying to sort of bring it to a little bit of domestic focus. What is sort of next? Like, is it an expansion of product portfolio, or is it sort of just going deep into with the existing portfolio and try to sort of, scale as much as possible, get as much sales and sort of get it picking up, increase margins, generate free cash flow, and then continuously start investing into R&D. Is that sort of the way, or there's a constant, you don't mind running, negative free cash flow, but to sort of innovate and constantly bring new products, which way would you sort of lean towards, right?
I think it's a perfect balance of a lot of many things. Primarily, yes, we want to work on innovation, one, absolutely, because that's going to build a new and new consumer base. Second, we are trying to work on repeats. This category or this industry do not have much. We just don't want to keep on coming out with new products again and again and just end up losing out on the consumer brand or consumer base that we created. That is the area which we are trying to even crack and evaluate, that how do we make sure that there are repeats for this particular product. So we started selling Pathfire, and post that we came up with bullets. So after you are done with your, like primarily I'm offering 5 shades of lipsticks, but you would only want to go ahead with 3. Okay, or maybe top 2 or top 3, you don't want to use top other 2. So we have given this option of customizing 5, your own lipstick, which 25 other different bullets where you don't have to buy stick again and again.
Right.
That's how we are even working on the environmental front, wherein we're trying to reduce all this, though we don't have to direct plastic, we're trying to do different, but we're trying to reduce the waste. Yeah. So that is what we're trying to even work on. Sustainability is what we're trying to work on as well. So it's a proper split of how you balance it out. Again, the other front we're trying to work is brand, that is for sure. Lately, we did one campaign with Khabi, like world's top influencers.
I've actually seen that one. That's that was very interesting. Yeah.
So without saying anything, he'll just do one action of him, which is very prominently famous, and that's how he's been famous. So we did a campaign with him as well. So taking it to another level, wherein just trying to focus on the problem that, you know, the campaign also suggests the same thing, that a woman is trying to fit a lot of cosmetic product in her bag, and Pathfire is the solution to all. Wow. So we keep on working on innovations on both the brand, on the product also as well as the brand. Yeah, I think that's how I see the balance of moving by. Yes, in terms of segments, this is halfway. That's not the category as a product. Last April, we launched our base category. Another few segments also we want to try and close. But that's there. But that's not the only point. We want to make sure how do we work on our repeats.
And how are you viewing your offline strategy here? In the sense that, are you you want to get into having branded stores, or you want to piggyback on third party retail? How are you viewing it? And secondly, we always kind of hear of things social commerce and metaverse, becoming more and more important as customer acquisition tools, and the value, power of referrals, the power of recommendations from trusted folks, and how one can use digital tools to scale up one's offering. Everyone knows the case study of a product like Tupperware, right? I mean, they kind of expanded sheerly on the basis of trust and referral based frameworks. Is that also something that you guys want to dabble in at some point in time? So obviously in terms of how the offline will talk to your online offering, right? Be it in-store customizations, be it in-store service delivery. How are you viewing that?
So, when we speak of offline category, trying to work out in a way wherein we have touch points at all prominent spaces. So, that's unsafe path. So far, we have 500 BL-led outlets, including Shoppers Stops and Harbour News, and all of them. Again, we are moving out and trying to even tap more and more outlets, which is going to reach to 2,000 touch points, which would also include our flagship stores. Flagship stores is just give that brand feel. It's not much to, there's nothing much to do on sales perspective. Yes, sales is a byproduct, but we are trying to create that brand feel, with our flagship stores.
Right.
What is that? We are trying to commoditize our pack five. So with that, we might reach to 50,000 odd GB stores that ready to go. Like how Kajal, eyeliner, all of them have been now commoditized. So see Kajal being sold even in a chemist shop, even in any XYZ shop, which has no relevance to cosmetics, but it is a commodity now.
We are
trying to work on that part of it, how to commoditize it. Last, we're trying to build a community. Like you said, that how can you balance on online to offline, or maybe offline to online. We're trying to create a community, trying to work on certain other systems wherein you make that wholesome base of your consumers, wherein if they buy something from online, delivery partner can ship it to them from offline store. Even if they are buying from some offline outlets or something which they can be, which they can get some credit points for online purchases as well. So that is the innovation and maybe technological development that is still working. It's still under the proto phase. But yes, we are working on making the whole community as a whole so that we do not loosen out on this fight of online and offline.
Yeah.
Lately, what you will see is that all these other brands running BOGO offers on online, buy one, get one, or retail, they go to the offer. So you're losing out on your consumers. We don't want to do that because at the end of the day, brand is losing that essence. We are working on that front. It might take some time to understand and come up with the technology, but we are on spot.
You know, in terms of capital, like you guys raised, you guys recently closed a 10 mil Series A with Mensa. So like you've got now marquee names on your cap table, right? And, you know, but we are currently going through kind of a flux in terms of the markets, in terms of the conditions which we see on ground, right? You know, be it geopolitical conditions, be it, you know, increasing interest rates. And there's a fair amount of commentary on how, you know, venture capital in the last quarter of the last fiscal is, you know, for the first time, it is on a both on a year-on-year as well as on a quarter-on-quarter basis, significantly lower. And, you know, obviously there is news which comes out on governance lapses in startups which do not really help. But D2C still is a pretty much a buzzword in when it comes to the VC ecosystem. But do you see, you know, from an investor expectation standpoint, the needle to have moved a bit, you know, be it in terms of, you know, their the amount of dry powder they would like to deploy to different brands, or, you know, their expectation in terms of, you know, okay, you guys need to like be free cash flow positive ASAP, you know, we're not going to like, you know, underwrite only on sales growth. We are going to, you know, be much more razor sharp on profitability, at least at the EBITDA level. Are you seeing those, I would say, external forces change?
Yes. So actually, you know, it's a phase wherein we've seen that all these investors are taking this day to make sure that before they jump up to any of such, or maybe any such investments for themselves, they're trying to evaluate it well. It's completely fine on their front as well. What has happened is a lot of other startups do not take it as a business level or a business perspective. They feel that, okay, we have fund, this is for free. I want to just, you know, dilute, not dilute, but I just want to invest it in a way where maybe I'll get sales after 3 years, 5 years, 10 years. That's not the business model that absolutely works. All of them would want to work on a business model wherein you are investing in any such campaign, though it be marketing, branding, or product development, innovation. You will want to see returns. What has happened is all these days, a lot of 80-85% of this new age startups have failed on showcasing that, still working on maybe procrastinating on what to do, when to do, how to do, and they dry up their all points they would have.
Right.
So that has been a really sad point for the investors as well, and that is the reason that. But apart from it, people who are doing well, there is nothing to you know, look back on that front, because brands who are doing really well, they understand how to tap a market, how to win a sale, and maybe how to close a sale and all of it. So if they are cash positive, or if little negative also works, but it is something in that continuously building up their top line, no investor would want to like hold back in terms of even investing or partnering, because it's fair feel that obviously till the time you reach at a level, little cash flow would go here and there. All of this listed huge brand or huge company is seeing us all in debt. Okay, but that does not mean that the businesses are not good. Yes, but you should have a forecast of when are you starting to be profitable. Or maybe, is it sustainable enough or not? Is this making any sense or value, or is it just a me too? So if that all the options are ticked well, I think there is no fight in investors investing in brand, maybe brands losing out on good money. It's a fair market.
Right, right. Interesting. You know, I just have one more question. What were your, like, you know, based on experiences in Beardo, you know, what was your learning in terms of, okay, bhai, this is something I'll never do again. It was a mistake. And, you know, from that standpoint, like, what exactly were your key takeaways from your former experience?
I think we were very keen to, like, not keen, but we were okay to fail and try it again and again. So it was never that I'm not going to do it anytime soon or I'm not going to try it again. I'm going to try everything again. I might be okay that would be not a right time, because I still understand that we launched the face wash and Beardo and we fall flat face. And then again we relaunched and it was doing top on charts.
Right.
So, you know, it's business. You might not be at the right time. There's nothing that you cannot try. Yes, we have to evaluate it well. We're trying to take it easy. There are a few pointers wherein we feel that we have been maybe taken well from our market growth strategies or some side campaigns that we did around, which made no sense or maybe burned a lot of money. But we just try and evaluate that, is it okay to do it or not? Right. So sometimes such decisions have to be taken wisely, that don't overspend on anything. Because when you have free flow of money, you would not want to see that what's happening on your P&L side, on your balance side, and you drain up all your funds. That's what we do not want. We never did. But we do have that continuous eye on that balance sheet and profit loss. Is it value adding? I understand the campaign is going to cost somewhere between 1 to 5 crores. But if it's not going to end absolute value within a quarter, because it is digital, okay, it's not making any sense. So we might not end up doing it.
Right.
You might look fancy. It might look fancy, but you have to avoid it.
Right.
So disciplined spending is the name of the game, right? This was a very interesting chat, Priyank. And obviously the sector, I mean, everyone knows that there are secular tailwinds in the sector and the market size as such is growing. So fascinating to have you on board and fascinating to hear the story. And we wish you all the luck. And obviously we'll be sort of well-wishers and cheering from the sidelines and seeing you guys grow. It's almost a full hour, so appreciate all the insights.
Thanks a lot. I hope I would make more value or sense to the audience who is listening. Would be more than happy to even, would be more than happy to even address any of the questions that your viewers would have. We'll be more than happy to even mention on that. But it was a great chat. Thanks a lot.
No, absolutely. Pleasure is all ours. And no, thank you so much. And Sharat, with that, I think we can call an end to this episode. It was extremely enlightening. A new sector, something about which I don't claim to have much first-hand knowledge, but that made it all the more interesting.
Yeah, agree, fully agree.
Perfect. So yeah, with that, this is Nikhil Arora.
This is Sharat Upran.
Signing off. Yeah.